We are talking once again with Mike Dolan, Deputy Director of Global Trade Watch and Field Director of Citizens Trade Campaign, a national coalition of labor, environmental, consumer, family, farms, human rights, and faith-based groups, which support a fair trade alternative to the failed and flawed free trade model. This coalition was responsible for the recent defeat of Fast Track in the 105th Congress and the defeat of the MAI in the OECD. Welcome, Mike Dolan.
Mike McCormick, thank you very much for having me back on your show.
Okay, you are back in Seattle after spending several weeks in D.C. to help out with civil society's organizing a response to the undemocratic structures and decisions of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, which Seattle is hosting the end of this year. But before we get into that, because we will be spending a good 20 minutes on that, let's talk about a couple tangents that happened here. Well, one of them happened here locally. A couple weeks, actually just a week ago, down in Tacoma, the longshoremen refused to unload a shipload of toxic cargo that was routed from Taiwan to Tacoma and destined for Idaho. And they managed to stop that. So question is, how did labor and environmental groups happen to come together in dealing with this particular toxics issue?
Well, actually, it started with some local environmentalists, a fellow named Jim Puckett working over at Apex, has been working on the issues relating to the trade and transfer of toxic wastes internationally. A lot of people, I'll dare say most people, don't know that there is a active and growing global trade in toxic residues, things you don't want in your own backyard. And Jim Puckett, who's a local activist, has been following this. There's something called the Basel Convention, which is an international agreement that regulates the transfer. So this is of toxic waste, and this has been an issue that he's been concerned with. He actually found out about the shipment. It had come from Taiwan. It's a very, very dangerous shipment of toxic waste that had actually resulted in, I think, one worker dying and another worker in the shipyards in Taiwan getting very, very sick. It was on its way here. And Jim Puckett called the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, called the feds, said, look, there's this, a very dangerous cargo coming here, and y'all ought to take a look at it. And the EPA said, fine, we'll take a look at it because, we're a bureaucracy, so we're going to look at it. And so while they were taking their sweet time looking at it, as bureaucracies are wont to do, the ship carrying this container ship carrying these toxic residues, showed up and was preparing to unload. Jim took matters in his own hand and did something that I think is really characteristic of or emblematic, if you will, of what sort of successful grassroots coalitions and networks need to be doing, especially in anticipation of the World Trade Organization summit coming up here in late November. More about that in a moment. But he contacted the longshoremen down at the shipyards, and he said, "Look, this is really dangerous. Keep your folks away from this until we can figure it out as an administrative sort of federal bureaucratic matter, but do not unload this." Well, I think about Hong Kong folks with a load of, some ship. I don't know that it was necessarily a boat from Hong Kong or Taiwan or Singapore or whatever, but here it was, and they're wanting to unload it, and the longshoremen are saying no, and the EPA is dragging their heels, and by the time the EPA sort of focused on what the danger was here, it's really a dangerous package of toxic waste. Fortunately, by virtue of the sudden, sort of spontaneous, but in many ways sort of natural and organic coalition between labor and environmental activists, the unloading stopped. Now, it's a trade issue. I'm not talking about trade and forest products or toys or airplanes out of Boeing. This is trade in toxic waste, but it is characteristic of a very, very big problem confronting global civil society, and that is unregulated trade under this sort of NAFTA, GATT, WTO model. The World Trade Organization is, of course, the WTO. There's a lot of acronyms, as you know, Mike, in trade stuff, and it takes some getting used to. But your listeners need to know WTO is coming to Seattle at the end of November, and we say no to the WTO.
So how do trade agreements and the WTO impact the movement of things like toxic wastes?
Well, it's a form of deregulation. I mean, sort of let's all go back to like what, you know, Reagan was all about. Pro-business, deregulating, allowing corporations, making sure that corporations enjoy the incentives and ultimately the profits that are generated by unregulated so-called free trade. Corporations under the current model, particularly under the WTO and NAFTA and similar multilateral agreements, are essentially encouraged to move production to countries, to, you know, areas of the world, mostly in the developing world, where wage rates are low, worker rights are non-existent, and if they exist, are not enforced, and environmental safety, consumer, and health regulations are, again, either non-existent or poorly enforced, and certainly don't compare to the kinds of regulations, health, safety, environmental, as well as labor rights and wage rates that we take for granted in this country. What's the impact for civil society? In this country, we lose jobs, clearly. And this is why organized labor is so adamant in rejection of the free trade model in general and the WTO in specific, is that it means the export of high-paying jobs to low-wage areas. But by the same token, it's no day at the beach for the workers and the working families in the developing world. They're the ones who are working in sweatshop conditions, who are barely paid a living wage, who have no rights to organize, and when they endeavor to do so, they're pushed out of helicopters. It's a system that benefits a very, very narrow range, this free trade system, a very narrow range of civil society, specifically transnational corporations, or if you will, Wall Street.
So it seems like there's definitely opportunities to build upon this partnership between labor and environmentalists that managed to stop this shipment.
Oh, yeah, and not just labor and environmentalists, but that coalition, that the Citizens Trade Campaign, that network nationally, nay, internationally, what it represents. There's so many constituencies in civil society that need to work together to fight corporate rule. Your listeners know this. I'm talking about environmental groups. I'm talking about labor, organized labor, workers. I'm talking about faith-based groups, a lot of progressive churches. I'm talking about family farmers in this country and abroad, people who are interested in sustainable agriculture. I'm talking about consumers. I'm talking about human rights activists, the whole panoply of the left. But also, I should say, also people who are just concerned about sovereignty and democracy and local control. These are all values that we share, you and I, Mike, and I'm presuming your listeners as well, that are under assault daily by the free trade lobby, by the transnational corporations, and frankly by the World Trade Organization itself. It's an important coalition, a growing network, an international movement, you know, and you referred to, and I'm saying this absolutely without hyperbole. You know, you mentioned in your introduction of me that we had worked so hard against something called the MAI in the OECD. All right. And so I mentioned a lot of acronyms, you know, in trade and investment, international globalization stuff. The MAI was, of course, the Multilateral Agreement on Investment. The OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, based in Paris, France. Okay, there's the MAI and the OECD. But we defeated that last year. And when I say we, it's not Public Citizen or the Citizens Trade Campaign, Mike. It's the network that you're talking about. It's an international, it's a movement involving globally all the sort of constituencies that I mentioned, all the elements of civil society, each of whom have a particular critique, but together they are a chorus. Together, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and together we beat the MAI last year using some of the same technologies that the corporations have, internet, fax, phones. But we're organized laterally across a broad section of civil society, and they're organized somewhat vertically, hierarchically. Who was it? Huey Newton, I guess, who said that you could kill a revolutionary, but you could never kill a revolution. And that's the way the movement is forming globally now, against economic globalization and against corporate rule, laterally, but effectively. And frankly, this WTO thing coming up in Seattle later this year is going to be a real, real test of the growing power of civil society to confront corporate rule and economic globalization.
Okay, 2 weeks ago you were in Washington, D.C. working to stop a piece of trade legislation written by our very own Jim McDermott. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and what groups and who stood to benefit from all
that. Sure, you're talking about the Africa trade legislation. So we call it NAFTA for Africa. Some of the African NGOs that we work with call it the Africa Recolonization Act. H.R. 434 in the House, it passed a little over a week ago, 234 to 169. We got spanked. You know, we got beat in the House of Representatives, and the bill has moved over to the Senate, where it has a Senate number, S666. A genuinely evil bill, the S666, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, so-called. It's only corporations that grow, and it's only Wall Street that enjoys the opportunity under this bad bill, this NAFTA for Africa. Jim McDermott. Jim, if you're listening. It's a bad bill. It's not progressive. It's NAFTA for Africa. It's a flawed and failed trade policy writ up for sub-Saharan Africa. NAFTA itself has failed at so many levels of detail in the 5 years that we've had it around. This is a bad model. There's a progressive alternative that we were supporting called HOPE for Africa, Human Rights Opportunity Partnership and Empowerment. It's an acronym, HOPE for Africa Act. In fact, your listeners who have access to the internet can find a side-by-side comparison of the bad bill and the progressive alternative at our website at Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, www.tradewatch, all one word, .org, tradewatch.org. So it's moved over to the Senate. We're going to fight it there. Forget Slade Gordon. He's a lost cause. Free trader. Patty Murray doesn't really get it at all. I don't know what Patty Murray gets, but everybody ought to give her a call and say, look, there's a better way to approach as we build a bridge, Patty, to the next millennium and to the new century with respect to economic globalization. The values that you supposedly share with us about labor rights and environmental protection, sustainable development, what have you, human rights, all of it. There's a better version. And in the Senate, that the better version, the progressive sort of side of it, the HOPE for Africa for the Senate, is actually being co-sponsored by Russ Feingold, senator from Wisconsin, good guy. Patty ought to become a co-sponsor of that, and Senator Murray should vote against the bad Africa bill. It shows a real, though, this debate shows a real contrast between the old model and a new, more progressive, sort of worker-friendly, environment-friendly model for trade. People have asked us at the Citizens Trade Campaign and at Public Citizen, we know what you're against. You know, yeah, you're against NAFTA, you're against the WTO. What are you for? And this debate on the Africa legislation in these past months has allowed us finally to articulate in a real sort of specific, even down to sort of a legislative policy way, what we are for. And we are for workers and the environment and debt relief, debt reduction, debt elimination for sub-Saharan African countries. And we are for seriously addressing the problem of AIDS and HIV in sub-Saharan Africa, where, as you know, it's epidemic. And to do this in the context of our trade relations, we can encourage better business practices. We can frustrate the designs of the transnational corporate lobby. So anyway, it was a debate. We got spanked in the House. It's moved over to the Senate. Everybody calls Senator Murray.
So what's the tie together us for us, if you would, the NAFTA for Africa and the WTO? What are the similarities there?
Sure. It's easy. I mean, it's the model of deregulated trade that characterized the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. The WTO is, of course, larger than... It's 135 countries. It's bigger than NAFTA, which is three countries. It's bigger than the 29 countries that are, whatever it is, that would be involved in sub-Saharan Africa trade liberalization. But it is essentially the same model, which, as I described, is one which benefits a very narrow range of society, the transnational corporations. The WTO... is the legacy, the millstone around civil society's neck that was passed in the end of the Uruguay round of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, the GATT. 1994, lame duck session, the election is over, the Congress returns to Washington, D.C. for some important business. You are there. Lame duck session of the 104th Congress. Maybe, no, excuse me, 103rd Congress, lame duck session, dark of night, stealth, they pass the GATT, the Uruguay round. And most senators and most Congress members, nearly all, neglected to read the thing. It's really big document. It's 900 pages of implementing legislation alone. It's huge, huge bill. They didn't read it. They went ahead and passed it under enormous pressure from corporate America and the business roundtable and the Wall Street and the transnational corporate free trade lobby, and they passed it, and it gave us the WTO. The WTO, Mike, is the highest legislative and judicial body in the world. It is based in Geneva, Switzerland, and it maintains the rules relating to economic globalization, and it enforces those rules through tribunals of faceless trade bureaucrats, panels of three so-called trade judges, in proceedings that are completely closed to public scrutiny. And decisions are made in those tribunals which have the power, nay, often do, trump domestic law, federal, sub-federal, state, and local law, and to trump laws which we have passed democratically, because that they are considered to be so-called non-tariff barriers to trade. Usually this relates to, environmental regulations or health and safety regulations. And if other countries and corporations, especially in other countries, or even corporations based in this country, consider them to be barriers to trade, non-tariff barriers to trade, they use the WTO as a forum to attack those laws. And where those attacks are upheld, many, many lawyers for the corporations and many, many bureaucrats arguing it out. And where those laws are trumped, the WTO enforces through trade sanctions those laws, those rulings that trump, that undermine, that invalidate democratically achieved laws in this country. And there's a bunch of different examples.
Let's go into those examples, but I want to ask real quick, how is it that we didn't hear about this, really, that this was passed, obviously, in the dead of night, literally? Why isn't the media picking up on this? I mean, if it's basically nixing the laws of this country.
Well, we've had the WTO for 4 years, all right? Now, you take the sort of the natural ignorance of the official source news media, their inability to package, to get their collective editorial heads around issues relating to corporate globalization, and their, frankly, the natural free trade bias of the editorial boards of all the major newspapers in this country. And I won't say sort of conspiracy of silence, but I will say that there's a studied indifference to issues relating to economic globalization and its impact on civil society, workers, environment, consumers, and so on. But also I'll say this, we only have 4 years of experience with the WTO trumping laws, and it is very slowly, but definitely, and I like to think inexorably, percolating down to the level of sort of public education. That's a big challenge that we have nationally now, to educate the public about what this WTO is all about and what it means to workers and the environment, but also to the basic federalism that we enjoy on as a part of our constitutional fabric in this country, what it's doing to federalism and to local control and to sovereignty and democracy and similar ethereal values that we share. Since when I combine ethereal with ephemeral, I never do that right. Just stay away from there. And we do have a challenge. I don't think we're going to be helped by the mainstream media, but we got to keep plugging away so that people understand what this WTO ministerial is about. And I mean, particularly here in Seattle, we have a very, very, big task in terms of public education.
Definitely, I could agree with that. Just looking at the way that our Seattle mayor and the different Ron Sims and stuff have all been fawning at the WTO and welcoming it to town, because it's going to bring in all those trade representatives. And that's going to generate money. And
heads of state, the hotels are full, the international media. But I'm here to tell you, Mike, that they're not going to get away scot-free with this propaganda event. This is going to be a huge, huge protest, gargantuan marches, street theater, big puppets, as well as a whole series over the course of the week that the WTO is here of symposia and strategy sessions and press conferences and skills sharing among different groups. Activists and scholars are coming from all over the world to describe collectively a critique of the WTO, of this model that I've been talking about. And, we're working closely with local networks, but also national coalitions and international sort of movement partners to make sure that our message of fair trade gets out into the international mainstream media, as well as the sort of the WTO mostly ceremonial stuff that's going to be going on at the end of November as well. That's actually the reason why I'm here in Seattle. I mean, I'm bouncing back and forth between the two Washingtons, the sweltering, humid, squat Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and the beautiful Puget, a sound area where we are organizing the protest of the century, the protest by the Puget. Your listeners are encouraged to cancel their plans for late November. Stick around in town, because it's going to be a wild, wild time. It's going to be a party. It's going to be very crowded. It's going to be very educational. There's going to be a lot of not only political activity, but cultural activity as well. I mean, concerts and street theater and the symposium and so on that I mentioned. Going to be really a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think this is a historic opportunity, a historic confrontation between civil society and corporate rule. I'm really excited about it.
Okay, let's give people some examples of why thousands of people, and we're not talking about the trade representatives, thousands of ordinary people have to feel the need to fly here to Seattle to voice their opinions.
Sure. I mean, there's in this country already a lot of examples of how the WTO has adversely affected our interests and our values. I know some folks coming from Massachusetts. They really want to be here. A whole bunch of people coming over from, and that's a long way away. That's like, when you count the states there, that's a long way. And they're coming in to be a part of this, this protest, this confrontation, because they had a law that's been undermined by a WTO suit in Geneva, WTO case. They passed a law based on the anti-apartheid laws when we were in that struggle in the 80s, selective purchasing law. Basically, the law said, if you want to do business with us, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, sell us paperclips, whatever it is, right? I mean, as a sort of a market participant in Commonwealth of Massachusetts, you can't do business with the country formerly known as Burma. I think it's called Myanmar now, an autocratic, brutal, oppressive regime. And it's a selective purchase. Basically, it was based on, as I say, the selective purchasing laws of the 80s. When all you did, you take out the word South Africa, you put in the phrase, the country formerly known as Burma, and you got yourself a selective purchasing law. Well, back in the 80s, there was no WTO. Now there is. And that law, that state law passed by a Democratic legislature, signed by a Republican governor, runs afoul of an ancillary agreement called the Government Procurement Agreement, an ancillary agreement to the GATT, to the World Trade Organization, enforceable by the WTO in Geneva. And Europe and Japan brought a suit, which has merit. Massachusetts loses. The United States is in this rather awkward position of having to compel Massachusetts to change its law, eliminate that law, because the WTO in Geneva says it's gotta, that that's an impediment to trade. Corporations don't make decisions based on human rights records and the brutality of a regime and how many labor leaders or indigenous peoples activists are pushed out of helicopters, which are probably bought from the U.S. in the first place. They don't care. The corporations don't care about that. Right? That trade is about trade. Trade uber alles. It's about the bottom line. Right? Well, Massachusetts feels differently. But that law is vulnerable. That law is undermined by the WTO. We often say, and these our friends in Massachusetts are coming here, they like to say, you know, if there had been a WTO back in the 80s, Nelson Mandela would still be in jail. That's what's at stake here. You know, stuff that is important to us, not just human rights, but hello, democracy, sovereignty, the ability of a sovereign people, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, through their elected representatives, declare Massachusetts a market participant in the market to buy things. It's trying to regulate corporate behavior, and they can't do it because of the WTO, the highest legislative and judicial body in the world today. It's just not right. That's an example of human rights. Mm-hmm. People are coming from all over the country who were part of the struggle in this country to make sure that our struggle, I mean, it was a lobbying effort. I wouldn't call it like a movement, but the lobbying effort to make sure that our tuna fish on the shelves in our stores is a dolphin safe. You're not going to find little chunks of flipper, right, in your tuna. You don't want that, right? A very popular law we passed a few years back called the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And that's, again, the subject of a WTO suit. We say, if you want to sell tuna to the enormous American tuna market, a lot of consumers love our tuna, and if you want to sell it to us, you got to make sure that the tuna was caught using dolphin-safe methods. Mexico brings suit in the WTO, right? We backed down. We changed our law 2 years ago. The Marine Mammal Protection Act regulations, the law was changed to accommodate countries that don't. It essentially eviscerated our law, and your listeners need to know that when they start buying tuna on the shelves this fall, as a matter of fact, is when that it's going to be implemented, that change in our law. It might be a little dolphin bits in there now, and that's just, again, it's not right. We passed a good law. It reduced dolphin mortality. I mean, it had the effect that it was intended to have. Our law, and now it's been struck down by the WTO. Downward harmonization of standards, environment, health, safety, human rights, downward harmonization. That's what the WTO is all about, and it just ain't right.
And it's my understanding is the two ways that they either punish the country that's with these laws is they either eliminate the law or they pay a hefty fine.
Trade sanctions. That's exactly right. That's where the teeth are, is when countries have to pay trade sanctions, in the billions of dollars oftentimes. That's the motivation to get a country to change its law. I'll give you an example. Recent fight over bananas. Now, you know, the United States does it. We don't make banana. We don't grow bananas. There is no domestic banana industry in this country. Most people know that. We do, however, have Carl Lindner in Cincinnati, Ohio. Carl's the head banana of Chiquita Banana. He's the head guy there. He's the CEO. And his company, Chiquita, they've got just so many banana plantations down in Central America. I don't know if you've been down there at all in Latin America, in places like Honduras and El Salvador and Costa Rica. And they pay these workers pennies. I mean, you know, just horrible working conditions. Hell, incredible amounts of pesticides. Not real good. And then the European Union has some former colonies down there with cute names like San Lucia and these little former colonies in the Caribbean where a smaller, sweeter banana, a Caribbean banana, is grown. The Europeans, the EU, left a 10% of their market open to import from their former colonies under something called the Lomé Treaty. Carl Lindner rents the WTO by getting the United States to file a claim in the WTO against the European Union Say, you know, this is a barrier to trade. And I'm Carl Lindner in Cincinnati, and I want my bananas to have full, I want to control the European banana market. That's all there is to it, and gets the U.S. to file a suit in Geneva. And the Europeans say, no, you know, we're not doing this. These are our former colonies. Social stability and keeping these growers away from the drug trade where they're otherwise likely to go, keep them in the banana business, that's something that we're going to continue to doing. Back off. So what do? We're in the United States. Carl Lindner gives a whole lot of money, both to Democrats and Republicans. And so what do? We impose tariffs, 100% tariffs on stuff coming over from the EU. You know, like Shetland wool sweaters from Scotland. I mean, things that we get from the European Union are suddenly slapped with tariffs in retaliation for their intransigence. My God, their intransigence of protecting their former colonies and protecting the workers in those countries. It's an outrage. I have to say, it's especially an outrage because the United States brought the suit. Carl Lindner gave the money to the Democratic and the Republican parties to get them to, you know, endorse this suit. So he essentially rented a country, in this case, the United States, to file a suit in the WTO. What it goes to show is that there's real teeth to this thing, that the WTO, whether or not people know about it or the media covers it, is really a very, very dangerous institution. And it reflects a bad model, and it benefits a very narrow range of civil society. People need to know that. They're coming to Seattle. We've opened a headquarters downtown. Your listeners are welcome to come by and volunteer. Between now and then, in the next 17 weeks, the address is 1914 4th Avenue. Getting some phones laid in this week. I'll get back to you with what that phone number is. But in the meantime, people can call 877-STOP-WTO and talk to Sally Soriano, whom you know, Mike, coordinator of the Washington Fair Trade Campaign. And I do encourage people to get involved and become part of the sort of action hospitality team network in this community for the activists and scholars coming from all over the world and the WTO itself. It's going to be a really exciting time, and that's why I'm spending a lot of time in Seattle now.
Great. So hopefully we can have you back in another couple months, and you can give us an update on this, how the fight is going.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I mean, it's the activist community in this town, if they don't know about it already, you'll be hearing about it more and more as we get closer. The dates, again, November the 29th through December the 3rd. After Thanksgiving there, if you've made plans to be out of town, please cancel them. Please stick around. We're going to have some fun fighting corporate rule.
Great. Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Mike Dolan, Field Director for Global Trade Watch. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. See you again.